Community Conversations with Community Centres SA. Here's Kerry Ackermans.
Foster and kinship carers play an invaluable role in our community, opening their hearts and homes to children and young people who, for a range of reasons, can't live with their birth families. With more children coming into state care than ever before, the role of caring has never been more important. We're joined today on the podcast by Fiona Endicott, Chief Executive Officer of Connecting Foster and Kinship Carers South Australia Inc., and Verity, a carer, and George. Welcome, Fiona.
Thanks so much for having me.
Fiona, tell us about Connecting Foster and Kinship Carers SA. It's a not-for-profit?
Yes, it is. We're a not-for-profit non-government organisation, and we're the independent peak representative body for foster and kinship carers across the whole of South Australia.
Now, fostering children has been going on for a really long time, but I'm sure you've seen a great deal of change during that time. Is the role expanding? Is the organisation, is there more need for care? Just give us a temperature test of where it's at.
There certainly is a need for more family-based carers in South Australia. We're seeing an increase in children and young people entering care year on year. At this point in time, we're at 84% of children and young people are in family-based care, and we'd love to see all children and young people that happen to find themselves in care with a loving family, like a foster or kinship carer family.
So Fiona, talk to us about the organisation itself, what its programs are, how far it reaches, what's its size. Give us some concept around that.
Certainly. So Connecting Foster and Kinship Carers developed over 20 years ago by carers for carers, so over the kitchen table type concept. And through the passage of time and dribs and drabs of funding that popped through, the organisation developed in its governance and skills to become the independent peak body that it is today. So the work that we focus on is providing connection, support, information and advocacy to foster and kinship carers across the whole of South Australia, regional and metropolitan, ensuring that carers have the best possible information at their fingertips so that they can care for their young people the best way possible. So we find that the majority of individuals access our information by way of our website, but also by joining up for a free membership as well, and they get information sent to them weekly on average around new opportunities for carers to access, information that might assist them in caring for their young people.
And what leads someone to be a carer? Is there an assessment criteria that people need to go through before they can become an official carer?
Really depends what type of carer you are, Kerry. So we have foster carers, individuals who make that decision to become a carer and go through the process of applying, training and being approved and then having a young person placed with them. And then we have kinship carers who, one might say, are the instant carer, might not necessarily have considered being a carer in the past, but then found themselves in a position where sometimes a family member or a person known to them is removed from their biological parent and they need to care. And kinship carers almost become overnight carers, so to speak.
That must be really challenging.
Certainly is very, very challenging. And from the perspective of the peak body, foster and kinship carers, the issues are vastly different. So whilst they do care for children and young people under guardianship, the kinship carers almost have retrospective training applied to them. They're having to navigate and learn a system on the fly. Foster carers do something similar, but they have made the conscious decision to become a carer. So very, very different. We would love to see more kinship carers become members of our organisation, because we often find the information isn't supplied to them straight away. So being connected in with us right at the beginning of their journey would be perfect.
Would it be fair to say then, Fiona, that to become a foster carer is a choice, to become a kinship carer is something put upon you?
It's certainly something that has been shared with us by our kinship carer members. It's a situation where if someone was to come to you and say, will you care for a young person that's known to you, many kinship carers will say, of course, what are they going to do? Say no?
Exactly. And it's a lifetime that it's you've taken lifetime. On.
Exactly. We have a lot of grandparent carers, a lot of aunts and uncles. We have siblings who become kinship carers. And of course, they want to see the best possible outcomes for their family members. So often we'll say yes.
And it's not just taking on the life, it's taking on the financial, we won't use the word burden because we don't want to think about that, but there is a financial cost to caring for anyone, for caring for ourselves.
Most certainly. And that is one of the main areas that, as the peak body, we are lobbying to ensure that carer remuneration is actually representative of the true cost of providing care for children and young people that are under the state's care. So at this point in time, we do know that the carer payment does not meet the true cost of caring, and a lot of carers are finding themselves out of pocket. We even find some carers have disclosed that they're tapping into sources of income such as superannuation in order to care for their children and young people. And again, it's that situation of, well, what will you do? Of course you're going to do it. You want to make sure that your young person is cared for, supported, has the services that they need.
I'm talking to Fiona Endicott, Chief Executive Officer of Connecting Foster and Kinship Carers, South Australia, Inc. So Fiona, if you were to look at the organisation as a whole, where is your greatest need?
Our greatest need, so the main lobbying efforts that we as an organisation are pursuing at the moment is ensuring that carers are receiving adequate carer payments, that they're also accessing flexible respite options so that carers can have much needed respite breaks, not breaks from their children, but what does it mean to have breaks from just the general back and forth of life? What does it also mean to have procedural fairness embedded in legislation? So the mission and vision of our organisation is ensuring that the carer voice is heard and that their rights are upheld. So a lot of our work is actually derived from hearing from our carers, and it's embedded in the systemic advocacy work we do, lobbying parliamentarians, ensuring that legislation truly reflects the carer voice and carers across the whole state.
Very important role as a peak body. CCSA is a peak body, the voice for our community centre members, and we have a lovely connection in there. Thank you, Fiona. Next, we're going to be speaking to Verity, who is a carer. It's going to be very interesting to hear it from that lived experience point of view. Verity, what made you become a carer?
Well, Kerry, I care for my nephew, and I hadn't had contact with my sister for probably about 12 months. As is often the way, there was a disconnect in family connection through her adversity and circumstances. And when I knew that my nephew was being removed from her care, I couldn't not look after him.
It's a big thing, I'm sure, though. I mean, this is, as I said, we talked about, it's a life decision. It's forever. When you're a parent, you're a parent forever. When you're a carer,
I would be lying if I didn't say there wasn't a grieving process. My children were adults and living independently. I had just resigned from a job and was ready to take on full-time doing something else in life, and I just didn't anticipate it was going to be looking after my nephew, who was 7 at the time. He's 12 now.
And there are a lot of challenges in that, because you've already walked that path with your own children, as you said, mm-hmm. and they've got to develop this whole new relationship, and no doubt he's grieving as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The change in dynamics, so to go from, well, he hadn't seen me for a while, and 12 months is a long time in a child's life. So there's that. There's also, I was the fun auntie, you know. So I would have him come over, and I would, you know, have him for the weekend, and we would do fun stuff, and our relationship dynamic changed. And that was confusing for both of us, trying to settle into what that looked like being his parent and the changing nature of our relationship. And it was really funny. At one point, after coming into care with me, he decided, he sort of was trying on a few things for a different fit. And initially he said, I think I want to call you Mum. And I actually didn't feel comfortable with that, and I didn't say that to him. And he said, no, maybe not. Maybe I'll call you Marnie, because you're my mum auntie.
Oh, I love that. That's great.
And that fits for both of us. And I think it's reflective of our relationship now. And we've kind of made it our own.
So you're a kinship carer, after
correct.
Fiona's definition.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yes.
We know it must have been challenging, but is there joy from it as well?
Oh, I cannot tell you. Parenting the second time around, particularly with a young person who has complexities, not only from trauma, but also neurodivergence, and a whole raft of other things that come with kids who, you know, have had a tough start to life. And he's amazing. His nuggets of wisdom, his ability to find and see joy in everything, his ability to teach me. So, for example, I tend to be someone who'll use 20 words. He reminds me regularly, Auntie V, you could say that in 3, right? Oh. And I love that. I
good
love
economy.
That. Yes, absolutely. And the best part, the most rewarding part, is seeing him thrive. I wasn't a perfect parent back then, and I'm certainly not a perfect parent now. And in fact, I think it's in embracing my humanity and allowing space for him to embrace his is what has worked so well in our relationship, and one of the reasons why he's now able to identify and to thrive and stretch and try different things. And he's doing amazing. I couldn't be prouder.
Well, that sounds absolutely wonderful, Verity. I am interested in the challenges, though. What did you find the hardest?
Sure. So initially, the idea that I'd known him all his life, and so having him in my home and parenting him would be, I've done this before, right? It's not like that at all. The level of complexities that we've had to walk through together has been quite significant. I think financially, so unfortunately, my best laid plans were changed, and I mean changed significantly. I'm not a young woman, I'm 54 now. I haven't been able to work since he's been in my care. In fact, you know, I would like to work again. However, I am limited in terms of being able to support him appropriately in what I can do. Digging into my savings, I'm renting a house. The possibility of buying another home at this point in time is probably looking fairly slim. And so things like superannuation for carers, you know, increased remuneration, not as a money-making exercise, but to actually quantify what we do and how we can best support children in care without compromising living security, job security, all of those things that come with it.
And I'm sure, Verity, that the option of living in someone's home who cares for a child is always a better option than having to go through the government system, although we are glad that there is a government system. But if there's a choice, it would be to be within a home.
Absolutely. I have a little story.
Please share your story.
My little mate, and I say that with permission, he likes me to call him my little mate. It's less formal. We don't like the term carer. He goes on camps. He loves camps. And he can find it challenging sometimes to socially connect. And on his last camp, he met a young boy who's about his age. And he said to me, came home and he said, Annie V, I met somebody and I gave them your phone number.
Goodness.
Which is fine, but this is an agreement that we mm-hmm. have, and I just hope whoever calls me is okay. And usually it is. And this young person, he said he lives with DCP. So this young person actually lives in residential care.
Right.
I then reached out through DCP to find where the boy was located and link him with his workers and that sort of thing. And he's come over a couple of times since then, and that's something that I would never have probably opened the door to if not for having my little mate in my care. But what was really significant about this, the last time he came over, his carer bought his bike. Now, this young boy hadn't ridden his bike for 2 years. He was not confident and the bike was too small for him. And I remember watching him and cheering this young person on, thinking how awful that a 12-year-old boy is living in conditions where he doesn't get to go out and ride his bike regularly.
That's very sad. No, thank you for sharing that story. It reminds us all. Very just lastly, what advice would you give to someone thinking of becoming a carer? I mean, it was the situation where you took it on because you had to and didn't know, but there's others out there from foster caring. What would you say as a piece of advice?
Sure. I would say that it's not about being perfect. That's number one. I'm guilty of it too, overthink these things. Number two, link in with as many supports and resources as you can. So that includes other family where it's safe to do so, organisations such as Connecting Foster and Kinship Carers, who I've made some wonderful friends, other carer friends that extend beyond the organisation. I would also say that whatever capacity you can offer a young person is important. So whether that's actually taking a child into your home permanently or spending one day a month with a child, their needs are simple. They need to be loved, embraced, cherished, and really feel a part of something much greater. And I can't do that on my own. No carer can. And I think any way that somebody is able to step in there, no matter how small, or whether it's taking a child on permanently, is important. And I encourage everyone to do it because the enrichment that is brought to my life is immeasurable.
Wonderful words. Thank you very much. Appreciate that, Verity. We're now going to hear from George, another lived experience story to share. I'd just like to welcome George. They are going to speak to us about their lived experience story on caring. Welcome, George.
Hi, Kerry. How are you?
Good, thank you.
So Verity is my mother, and she looks after my cousin as a kinship carer. I call him my Bruzzy, my brother cousin.
I'm loving these acronyms.
The acronyms work for us. We love it. I am so grateful that Mum was able to take him into her care. Without that, I would have completely lost contact with him, which would have been so devastating. I am so grateful that I get to have a consistent, meaningful relationship with him. He brings so much joy to my life. I get to hang out with him for days, and we have weekends that we spend together as well, and I get to show him all of the things in the community and in life that I enjoy and bring me joy, and we get to experience that together. And in particular, we like to get involved in a lot of community groups and community organisations. One of our favourite places to go is the Adelaide Bike Kitchen, where we go and we learn how to repair our own bikes, and then we go out and we ride them with the Unli Bicycle User Group, and we go to other community events like South Australian Grassroots Ecosystems, where we can learn more about the community and how we can be actively engaged in it and really get to know and connect with other people who are out there and understand the broad possibilities of life, which is so exciting.
Well, George, that's really inspirational, and I love hearing the passion. Is there a part you can share where it didn't feel so good?
Yeah, I mean, when Mum took him into her care, I thought, oh, geez, you know, what are we going to do? How are we going to manage this? It's a really big responsibility and we don't want to let him down. So I definitely felt the pressure there to, you know, provide a role as a role model and as an adult in his life that could, yeah, provide guidance and support.
Perhaps just talk to us about, if you were speaking to somebody else who may be in the same position as you, what advice would you give?
I would give the advice that I think it's really important, like Mum said before, that any opportunity that you can have to be a part of someone's life, to be a part of a child's life, a child in care, it is such an enriching experience, as well as it is for them to get exposure to a broad range of people and life experiences. So certainly my involvement with this in my family has meant that it is now a possibility to me, the kid that Mum was talking about before. Now I'm thinking, you know, is there a way that I could support that child as well as my own cousin? So just getting involved how you can.
Absolutely wonderful. Thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you.
So Fiona, an important week this week. It is Foster and Kinship Carers Week. Tell us what's happening and what are the numbers involved with carers?
So yes, Foster and Kinship Carer Week is traditionally the second week of September every year. So this year it's the 8th to the 14th of September. And it's an opportunity for the Department for Child Protection and all the non-government organisation partners within the community to come together and thank and celebrate all foster and kinship carers for the immense, incredible work they do. So you'll see many organisations will host lunches, afternoon teas, dinners, you'll have outings, connection events, you name it. It's all in the name of celebrating and thanking the amazing foster and kinship carers in South Australia.
Well, I add my thanks to that as well. An incredible job. Thank you so much for sharing with us today. And thank you for listening and engaging with our community conversations today. Every week, we aim to bring you stories from far and wide, across South Australia and beyond. People who are game changers in our community, doing great work, plus general topics of community interest. If you have any subjects you think we should cover or any other feedback, please let us know at communitycentressa.asn.au and feel free to share this podcast so we can engage more people in our next community conversation.
Community Conversations. For more information, check out communitycentressa.asn.au.